making it more like classical music, more anodyne. And yet the New York Dolls, they revered this. They loved Chuck Berry. They loved Fats Domino. Heck, they even covered Bo Diddley on this album.
Yeah.
And I think what they did is they reintroduced that idea that rock and roll could be dangerous, that they could actually perform a bit of tribute to these roots, and they actually showed how energetic it could be. And the music was intellectual, not in the sense where it was hoity-toity or pretentious, but it was intellectual in the sense where it really did explore urban alienation. Mm-hmm. And I think every song, in some level, contemplates that drive for authenticity young people just fight for, but often fail to find in such a manufactured culture that they live in.
Yeah, and earlier when I was saying the music at the time, maybe psychedelic wasn't the right word. There was a lot of 60s music, but it was mostly a lot of folky stuff, as you were saying. There was definitely some great psych bands. But yeah, it was a very different time. And so New York Dolls kind of came together and kind of, I guess, crawled out of the underground, or maybe they slithered, I don't know, but
on their bellies like reptiles. I think so, because they love that sort of reptilian element.
Very sleazy.
Very sleazy, and they loved it, and they owned up to it. There was a lot of course, boogie-woogie, a lot of classic rock in their sound, but a lot of camp as well, as you can tell from their name, from their very flamboyant performances. But they also loved Brill Building Pop and Motown, and all of that worked its way into their music.
Shangri-Las, girl groups, Rolling Stones, Stooges, T-Rex.
So let's talk about a little bit of the history of the group just before we get into the music. They formed in 1971. The original lineup was David Johansen. We had, of course, Johnny Thunders on guitar. We had Arthur Kane on bass. And then we also had two members that were not long for the group, Rick Rivets, and a drummer that you talk about quite a bit.
Well, originally they had Billy Mercia.
Billy Mercia, that's right. Who we'll talk about it a little bit when it comes to the history of the band, but he played a significant impact in the group in a particular way.
He was very good friends with Sylvain Sylvain, who would take over for Rivets. And then eventually, unfortunately, Billy Mercia did pass away kind of while they were... A lot of attention was being drawn to them in the underground. He passed away kind of in a freak accident. And Jerry Nolan would take over, who would become one of the classic lineups for the band.
Yeah, he'd be a linchpin for the group. Now, Mercia and Sylvain, actually, they had an interesting pairing because they didn't want to be in a band at first. They actually worked at a clothing store at a business around Lexington Avenue. And this is the interesting point, because right across from the street from this clothing store that they tried to operate was a toy repair shop called the New York Doll Hospital, and that's where they got the name for the band from.
Yes, Sylvain Sylvain goes... He put a book out a couple years ago called There's No Bones in Ice Cream, and it is a really, really great memoir of his time with the Dolls and growing up in New York, and even after that a little bit. But yeah, he mentions this incident. They had a clothing store. He was very in with fashion. Like I believe his family's background actually was in... fashion. I think his dad was like a tailor or something. Not in the U.S. because they immigrated. But anyways, that's a great story. So he always wanted to use the name New York Dolls, and they did. And eventually they all kind of came together, and then they started out doing what were called rent parties, where they needed money for the rent, so they would invite all their friends over to a loft, and they would play music for a long time, and the money would cover the rent and other things.
Yeah, other recreational goods for
them,
which they were very notorious for indulging in. But with that said, they garnered a huge cult following, and it got to the point where, due to the success of the band and a lot of critical acclaim that was happening for their live shows, they actually managed to get on a tour with the Faces, and they played with them at the Empire Pool in Wembley. Now, what happened was, of course, the Mercia incident where he passed away and Jerry Nolan replaced him as drummer, and the band returned to New York, where they continued to play to capacity crowds in many venues, including famous ones like Max's Kansas City and the Mercer Arts Center. And it was at a performance at the Mercer's Arts Center where two agents from Mercury Records stumbled across the show, Bud Skolpa and Paul Nelson. It wasn't much longer afterwards. They were so impressed by the group that they became basically fanatics of them, and they were hired on to Mercury Records. And in March of 1973, the group signed a 2-album deal for the label. So yeah, That's basically the starting point of the New York Dolls. We're going to play side A of the self-titled album from New York Dolls. And then when we have that break, we're going to talk a little bit more about the production of the album, how it was created, and their very tenuous relationship with the album's producer, Todd Rundgren.
Yes, so let's get to it. We're actually going to start off with a track from the album proper, Personality Crisis, and follow it up with a demo from 72 of Looking for a Kiss. So let's get to it. You're listening to Revolution Rock here on CJAM 99.1 FM, and we are celebrating the 50th anniversary of New York Dolls' debut release.
Well, we can't care. Looking for a kiss. Looking for a kiss. Okay, everybody ready? This is a campy song. Is everybody ready? Okay, are you rolling? Okay. Lonely Planet Boy. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Some from them other boys that sweat on the lonely.
gotta ask you one question, children. Do you think that you could make it with Frankenstein?
You're listening to Revolution Rock here on CJAM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area, and syndicating across several different stations here in Canada. We just came back there from a set, side one of New York Dolls' self-titled debut album, but kind of in a different way. As we do here, we play different versions to make up the album.
So we ended off there with a pair of tracks that come from the same compilation, A Hard Night's Day. These were the 1973 studio sessions that took place at Planet Studios in New York. Giving a little bit of the history of it, Dave, they signed to Mercury Records, and that's where we ended off, given our history of how the album was produced. So, after signing with Mercury, they played all the songs they knew at the time live in the studio.
Yeah, so it was recorded live off the floor. Some of it, like, it's great. The versions are different, and that version of Frankenstein was quite different, and also Lonely Planet Boy, which we heard before that, which came from the same session.
Because that was electric as opposed to the acoustic version that was on the album proper.
And this one sounds a lot like what would eventually be You Can't Put Your Arms Around a Memory by Johnny Thunders. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of in the album version, which is acoustic, but it's not the same.
No, very distinct in that way. I do want to mention, too, the title on the album for Frankenstein isn't just Frankenstein. It's Frankenstein Original in parentheses. And, Dave, I love this story. Can you explain why that is?
It's because of Johnny Winter. Maybe you can tell why.
Okay, so the Johnny Winter Band released the song Frankenstein, even though the New York Dolls had been playing the song for years and got quite a bit of a cult following in New York City, as we were explaining before Side A started playing. Anyway, they did this kind of in a tongue-in-cheek way to differentiate the song from the Johnny Winter's version, saying, no, this is the original. So that's why it's in parentheses. So if you ever wonder why that is on the album sleeve, that's how come. So we actually went from those to hearing something from the album proper, the official 1973 Mercury Records release, their track Vietnamese Baby.
Yeah, and this, we were talking about lyrically how, I guess the band kind of seemed a certain way to people because they had these really like crude, sleazy rock riffs, and also they would sometimes dress in a glam way and drag sometimes, but mostly just in a flashy way. So maybe people had a preconceived notion of what the band was. Like, maybe they thought they were just a dumb rock band.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of points where you're like, the lyrics are really great. And specifically on this song, Vietnamese Baby, they're very on a different level and much deeper than what you might expect.
Exactly. And there was no shortage of songs about the Vietnam conflict in popular culture and rock music at the time. But, you know, this one really explored the type of collective guilt that Americans felt while still pursuing shopping for leisure goods and products while this horrible atrocity is happening, in which the Americans are directly responsible for exacerbating. Really exploring this is a very deep concept, something that, you know, no one really gave the Dolls credit for, nor David Johansen, who penned the lyrics for this. Mm-hmm.